All right, welcome to the 7500 to Hold podcast. New this week. Sorry we skipped a week, everyone. I'm Gareth Simpson, taking the reins today, and with me is Robert Lintott.
Howdy, everyone.
Andrew Cieslak.
Hello.
And authentic Englishman, Graham Macri.
Hi there.
Right? I ad-libbed there.
Yep, you got me right.
I was worried. Okay. Well, I figure we might as well, until Kirsten shows up, we might as well start with the international talk, as we are officially now on international break. From everyone on Twitter complaining about international break. Well, yeah, because these matches have absolutely no importance, aside from one we're looking forward to, particularly here on the blog, is England's matches against Sweden and Spain, particularly because Gabriele Von Lahore has finally been picked. And so as we do have an authentic English person on the podcast, we turn to you, Graham, for your sort of impression on the squad and how you think it's going to look.
Well, first of all, I think Von Lahore really deserves his place. He's been probably the best wide English player so far this year. But, and I know Capello hasn't done very much to him in the past, but it's difficult to know whether he was selected by accident, because if you look at the rest of the squad, it makes no sense at all, or actually merit. So there's some strange things going on with England. Look, if you look at right back, Micah Richards is the only real right back England have, and he's not even been selected. You guys had fun with Kyle Walker's defending last year. Glenn Johnson's isn't any better. So I don't know what Capello's doing with some of the spots.
Well, and that's what I don't get about Von Lahore, is I don't know, like, he is a fantastic player and he's in a marvelous run of form, but I don't know how he fits into Capello's England, sort of, that's in air quotes. Do you think it's so he, because of his partnership with Bent? Because Bent seems pretty nailed on to start now.
Well, Capello said he's going to start the youngsters, which means we're probably going to see Sturridge, we're going to see Jack Rodwell, and those guys. So I don't even know if he has a plan. I'd like to think he has a plan, but nothing that he's done so far has indicated that it's anything more than, oh, you're playing well, I'm going to pick you and put you somewhere.
Has Fabio Capello ever looked like he had a plan, though?
He looks like he might have a plan, but that's just because he seemed stern enough that he'd get angry if I said he didn't. So, no, I just don't see it as being, oh, you're a good partner with Bent, or anything like that. It's just he's playing well, he's getting picked, and that's it.
He's making up the numbers, essentially. He'll be on the bench.
Well, I suspect he'll get a start in one of the two games, just because I think Capello wants to see his new guys do something, and Von Lahore is going to be considered one of the new guys to the camp, despite having been called up before.
Right.
I think Von Lahore is probably a good choice for the Euro 2012 anyway, but I just don't see it as being something well planned out.
See, this is kind of where I differ, because even though I am, you know, a Villa fan, I don't know if Von Lahore really is a good choice for. I mean, it's unlikely he's going to stay fit and in form all the way through to 2012. I mean, he's been inconsistent over the last few years. His last England call up was, I think, 3 years ago. And so, I don't know, it's difficult to plan around a player like that.
Well,
go ahead.
Let's say that if he stays like this, he's a great call for Euro 2012, and he goes, if he does his Von Lahore thing, he's a bad call for Euro 2012.
Well, would you start him against Ashley Young, for example?
Start him over Ashley Young, or?
That's what I meant, yeah.
That really depends on how Young does with United for the rest of the year. I think he started brilliantly and then he's gone off a little bit. So if Agbon is playing like this, yes.
Okay. Well, let's see. Try and think of something else to talk about with the international break.
Well, I was wondering with Agbon Lahore, it seemed from what little I got to watch of England that Capello was really hoping for that young Rooney to carry over from Manchester United to the England side. Is there any chance you think he's thinking of that, since he doesn't have Rooney for a little bit now, with regards to Von Lahore Bent? Maybe his idea is get people who already have chemistry together up front for England.
It's definitely a possibility that he'd be thinking in terms of that. But when you're leading up to a major tournament, you're practicing together for a while. It'll be after the season's over. He'll have the group together. There'll be some time to get some chemistry anyway. And it's not as though, say, Downing and Young haven't got a strike partnership with Bent already established. They didn't magically lose that when they wandered off this summer. So,
Downing seems to have lost some of his skills somewhere this summer.
I think that could be to do with his team.
Yeah, you know, his numbers don't look that good, but when I put on Liverpool and I've seen him play, he can still cross the ball the same as he always has. I just don't know what the hell's going on.
Well, when you have Andy Carroll as your answer, you're asking an interesting question.
I think that's
something to do with not playing a competent center forward. And yeah, Liverpool seems to have some troubles that are not entirely related to Stuart Downing, but he's suffering from them. But that's
important. Right.
Well, it strikes me that when you have a wide player like Downing, what you really want is a, like you said, a competent centre forward, and their best striker is a wide forward. So when you play Suarez with Downing, what's Downing going to do? Pass him the ball occasionally? There's just no point.
That's what I was trying to say. When they went out in that buying spree this summer, it didn't make any sense. It felt like they weren't buying people to complement each other, and Downing's obviously suffered from that.
I would imagine they bought Downing because they thought he could develop some sort of partnership with Carroll, because Carroll did so well with Joey Barton just at Newcastle United. But for whatever reason, I think it might be entirely down to Andy Carroll, who, I mean, it's worth noting, is also potentially going to play a big part in England's future simply because he's very tall.
I kind of enjoy the irony of a team that's partially owned by LeBron James now, I think, splashing cash with no real plan. You know, if there's any model that LeBron James would know about.
I imagine he's not in charge of transfers.
Wait, what? You don't think the man who dominates the NBA shouldn't be in charge of transfers?
I have noticed this. I can't claim to this idea, but someone on Twitter was saying they've now saved a search for Dalglish out and are taking some real glee from that. And I did that as well. And it's fun. It's good fun to look at.
Good gracious.
Because I think we're way off topic now, but we might as well roll with it. I think for what it's worth, Dalglish might have a worse record at this point in the season than Hodgson did at this point last season, but that's,
a couple of weeks ago, I looked at Hodgson and Dalglish's records together because they'd actually been in charge the same amount of games. And I think Dalglish had won one more and lost one less than Hodgson. So, yeah.
Yeah, but he just feels so much better.
Well, it's because he used to play for them and Hodgson didn't.
Right. I totally agree.
Well, and to be fair, Hodgson... Well, I mean, West Brom at the moment have been absolutely terrible, which makes me feel even worse about our loss to them than I already did.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute, too, in regards to how we view Villa, you know, compared to a bunch of other teams in the league. But, ugh, God. Well,
Did you want my feedback on how I view Villa?
I think I know.
Go ahead.
Oh, you want it now? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I would like Villa to be much better than they are, and I really, really hate your manager.
Yeah, that feels about right, yeah.
Yep.
Secretly, Graham is a Villa fan.
I'm a Villa fan insofar as that it makes people yell less near me.
Yeah, exactly. It makes life better if they're good.
Yeah. And if Barry Bannon isn't doing something stupid.
Yeah. But I mean, if we're on this topic, I mean, I might as well, like, the thing that got me thinking about, just like thinking about like teams like Wolves and teams like West Brom that we've struggled with, you know, how do we, aren't we, don't we view Villa as better than those teams? I mean, just in terms of quality players up and down the roster, up and down the squad. I mean, but at the same time, every time Villa plays these teams, it seems like there's just stuck in neutral, nothing's happening, and that could be obviously McLeish, or it could be just complacency, or I don't know, but it just feels like, despite the fact that Villa spends more money and has a bigger profile, they just can't bury these teams the way you think that they should be able to. And it's, that's, I think that's part of what frustrates the hell out of me.
See, I don't know if I would think that though, like squad wise, like I think people think Villa is better than they are because historically they've been a very big club and they've won a lot. Well, not a lot of things, but they've won things. Won. They were knocking on the Champions League for a while, but realistically, I don't think our squad is a whole lot better than Stoke, for example.
Right, and that's where I'm talking about like an image thing, because I think the fans of Villa, especially ones you know who've been you know in grown up with Villa, for example, like we're obviously we didn't grow up with Villa, we're not from that area, but I think they have a view of Aston Villa as bigger than they actually are, and I think it's kind of unfair to expect things that just aren't realistic at this point. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, that's a question of ambition, and that's ambition within the front office and ambition like from the manager. And I think what we learned this summer, and I guess partly last year with the whole Julio debacle, is that at this point, I think Villa and, you know, Randy Lerner and all them have a big desire to play it safe, because, I mean, as much as we love, you know, winning under O'Neill, O'Neill also spent a lot of money on people like Javier Bay.
Right.
And now can't sell them on because he gave them ridiculous wages. And so financially, and this is a whole different topic that's been covered by smarter people than me, but our ratio of wages to turnover is absolutely horrific. And so we need a couple years of just mid-table boring, you know, mediocrity, essentially.
Right. And not spending massive wages on players who aren't going to play and getting those people out of here, you know, because nobody's going to buy the crap that O'Neill's brought in and still sitting on the bench. It's going to take some time.
But
yeah.
Then you bring in Alan Hutton and Jim. And
That's the thing that pissed me off. Exactly. The Hutton thing is awful, and he's awful, and it's McLeish's guy. So it's not like we can say he's old regime, right? He's new, and he sucks. And,
I think everyone knew he sucked too. Spurs fans wanted him out.
Absolutely.
I mean, do you guys remember what it was looking over at the Hotspur blog when we got Hutton? They were celebrating, and
yes,
that should be the first sign that, oh crap, we've done something wrong.
And no one's ever really liked Genus either. And even though I have, you know, higher hopes for him, perhaps because I haven't actually really seen him play yet.
I wouldn't have high hopes for him if I were you.
Yeah.
No. High hopes. I
higher hopes. I wouldn't have any hopes.
I believe in being mostly competent. That's the extent of my high hopes after seeing Steven Ireland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think with Villa, you have an interesting squad because you have some really good players and then some absolutely terrible ones, which kind of makes it feel like they should be better than they are, because it isn't that hard to replace terrible players with okay players. And if you did that, they'd be much better.
But yeah, like the thing about the Hutton transfer is that it seems like they're going to keep bringing in terrible players from time to time. I mean, you had a good chance to bring in, or even just go with somebody young, and they brought in a guy who is garbage and is going to be garbage for a while. And now I'm hearing a rumor about a German right back that caught McLeish's eye. I don't know if you guys saw that story.
I wasn't aware that Alex McLeish knew that they played football in Germany.
Exactly. That's why I'm not sure if it's legit or not. But I just, the Hutton thing is really what throws me for a loop, because you can't say, you know, they're not going to make mistakes anymore, because they just did.
I think the byword for Villa's management at the moment is Premier League experience. And this is why, I don't know, I was really more skeptical than Kirsten and Aaron, for example, about Roberto Martinez over the summer, because what he does is he goes and he tries to find, you know, bargains in other countries that will, you take a risk and they'll pay off. But, I mean, realistically, Villa's scouting department is absolutely anemic, and we aren't the sort of club that can do that right now. I think what the sort of modus operandi at the moment is, you buy sort of C-minus players who, you know, can be decent squad players and just hope for the best, I guess. I don't know. It's terribly depressing.
It really is. I wonder about the scouting department, and I keep coming back to this thought that I am, and this is how bad it is that I'm jealous of Newcastle, like utterly jealous of them, their squad anyway, the guys that they brought in. And I don't know. Everything I heard about Pardew is that he's terrible and he's a joke. And I mean, you can't argue with where they are, although I guess, you know, I'm sure somebody can come up with something. But
they haven't played anyone good yet.
Yeah. I figure that's part of it.
They have, but they haven't really, I mean, Arsenal and I think Spurs, but they haven't played either of the Manchester clubs and they haven't played Chelsea.
Well, at the beginning of the year, I did have them as the one team to watch from that group of teams between 6th and 12th. So I'm not that surprised that they're doing well, but obviously I don't think they'll be in the Champions League spots by the end of the year.
No, but they're another team with an ambitious transfer policy. Like, they took a lot of chances on, well, mostly French players who have been riddled with injury problems. Like, there's at least, you know, one or two of their players that bigger clubs were looking at, but because they had, like, I think Sylvain Marveau has like, I don't know, problems with his knee, and Demba Ba has problems, and they're people that bigger clubs wouldn't take a flyer on because they have a history of injury, but Newcastle could for some reason afford to do that because all of their established players were leaving.
Yep. And when you're in that sort of position, when you can either stay where you are or make a gamble, and if it doesn't pay off, whatever, you're still going to be top 15, you're not going to get relegated. That's the sort of thing you do because there's no risk in it. And if it comes off, the reward is great. And I don't understand why Aston Villa aren't looking at doing something like that, because it just makes so much sense to go for gambles that can pay off huge.
And pay off down the road, not just pay off for a year. Like Hutton, even if he were useful, he's a useful player for maybe a year or two. Like, he can fill a gap. But then, you know, what are you doing? If you're gonna end up in the same spot, you might as well do it with youth and upside instead of retreads and garbage.
It strikes me as strange that at this exact point last year, the only thing we could talk about was how awesome our youth were. And the fact that we had so much youth. And now all of a sudden we're bemoaning the fact that we have an old, bad team. And it's so strange to me because not that much in terms of the youth movement has changed. So why has our attitude changed with that?
Chris Hudd's hair got way worse.
That's true.
He looks like a Band of Brothers extra.
I think part of the problem is that the youth just aren't really playing. Like, does anyone remember Nathan Delfonso? Like, he played really well two seasons ago, and he's not.
Yeah.
They've not established themselves in the starting lineup, and whether that's because of the sort of tumultuous last couple of years that the club has had that sort of got derailed, but I don't know. And I wish I could see a more regular, you know, more of our youngsters appearing regularly in the starting lineup. I also, you know, you could be frightened playing too many young players at once and bleeding them all in from the reserves all at once.
But what's there to be frightened of? I just don't see what there's to be frightened of. Because if it starts going badly, we know Villa have got a team that are perfectly capable of avoiding relegation here. I mean, this is a team that will be solidly mid-table. So if you play the youth and it goes to crap, then you throw in the old people again and get out of relegation. And if you play the youth and it goes well, then things are good. I suppose it just bugs me that there seems to be so little willingness to do any youth play right now.
Maybe they all suck. I mean, it's a possibility.
It's definitely a possibility.
We don't get to see them in training, and so they might just be terrible. Who knows?
Maybe Nathan Delfonso is just a massive asshole, and no one likes him. Like, maybe he was a dick to McLeish or something.
That was my Bannon theory before he kind of came on at the beginning of this year. Like, that Bannon was just a complete knob, and everybody hated him, and he was just an idiot. And he certainly didn't prove me any wrong by going out and driving. I mean, I know Kirsten loves him, and a lot of people love him, and he's great to watch. He's one of the more interesting and creative players we have, but he always struck me as just kind of a dumbass, and, well, I guess he is a dumbass.
And the very first podcast we did was wondering what the hell happened to Mark Albrighton, and there was, you know, a variety of theories, because he played really, really well at the beginning of last season, and I believe I may have even seen a ridiculous article in The Guardian comparing him to, like, David Beckham or something stupid like that. But, you know, completely faded away. And there's not a logical explanation for that, because it's not like we have, I mean, last year you'd understand because Stuart Downing was in his position, fine. But it's not like we have a great, you know, right wing.
Albrighton's absolutely disappeared. You'd think he's been buried somewhere under the Meadowlands. I haven't even seen his face, I don't think, in weeks.
Do you want to know why Barry Brandon crashed his car?
I do.
Because he hit him. That's the real story. Just covering up Mark Albrighton's death.
Damn you, Barry, you've done so much wrong. It is.
I'm really looking forward to when Kirsten hears this.
What really shocks me about Barry Bannon being such a goddamn idiot is the fact that when he's on the field, he's the brightest player on the pitch. I mean, he seems to have soccer intelligence in scads, and then he gets off the field and he just seems like the dullest bulb in the box.
Well, hold on. So you're surprised that a quality creative player has a terrible personality? Have you been to the Netherlands?
All right, fair enough. I mean, I suppose, you know, football smarts don't translate to off-the-field smarts, but it's just, it's so night and day with him.
Well, I mean, we talked about how we view Villa in relation to the other teams, and Robert, you said that we're pretty much safe from dipping into the relegation zone, and I've got down Villa's fixtures for the rest of the year, and like Newcastle, we really haven't faced anyone difficult yet. So I was wanting to sort of run these by you guys and sort of get an idea of whether or not you think we're going to take a huge hit over the next few weeks. So our next match after the international break is at Spurs. And right now, Spurs are, I mean, they're doing really, really well. And of course, they're an inconsistent team. But I can't imagine we get, I don't know, I don't think we'll even get a point out of that.
I don't see it.
Spurs are kind of comically due a beating, though. Did you see the Fulham game?
I did, and they were absolutely, they were buried near the end of the second half, and Friedel, of course, as we've seen so many times, pulled them out of it. But I don't know, I don't think we're good enough to really, feels terrible, because Fulham is no good, and I'm about to say we're not as good as Fulham, so.
I think that would be, not as good as Fulham would be stretching things, because Fulham are really quite bad.
And I'm loath to give Fulham any compliments, seeing as they employ two of my least favorite players. But you know, I would have taken Martin Yole. That would have been fine.
Yeah, same here. I know you hate Dempsey. Who's the other one?
Sidwell.
Yeah, perfect. There you go. We all hate Sidwell.
Oh yeah. God, I forgot he existed.
Yeah, it was nice, wasn't it? Until just now.
Damn it, Gareth.
I'm sorry about that. I really apologize. I don't know. It's difficult because then, I mean, we have to face United, and even though we do it at home, I don't think we're beating United at home. Liverpool, Arsenal. I don't see us taking any points off the top teams, which we managed to do, you know, a decent amount of last season, even through all the crisis. But I don't see a mentality in this team where I don't believe Alex McLeish would go to White Hart Lane, for example, or to Stamford Bridge and say, yeah, let's go for 3 points.
No.
Stamford would do.
I'm actually tempted to look up how Birmingham did in those matches last year.
Birmingham beat Chelsea last year. We only outshot them 30-1, but they beat us.
Yeah. And it's like one of those football manager games. I know they had a really tough, they gave United a tough match at some point, I want to say in the winter. I have to look it up. But I mean, obviously.
We can even snag a point from United at home?
No.
I don't think we're winning that match, but I think we get a point out of it.
Off United? You think we're getting a point off United?
I don't think it's beyond you. It would just be surprising.
I guess.
This team has a way of showing up, though. I mean, they've crapped the bed so many times that it's hard for me to be optimistic. And I swore, what was it, a week and a half ago that I was done being optimistic. But it's at home, and it's against the team, and there'll be a huge crowd, and people will want to shut out Ashley Young. I could see some sort of a miracle point happening.
I guess now that I think about it, like the sort of, I would be more afraid of the sort of swashbuckling United side we saw at the beginning of the year now that 6-1 sort of mellowed them out, it wouldn't entirely be beyond Villa to keep the score low enough to snatch a point.
I think I'm a 1-1 draw.
Sorry, Andrew, what did you say?
I was just going to say, I think, you know, City scares me more than United does. I don't know why, but I guess it is possible.
It's because City will absolutely murder us. That almost like a perverse fascination in seeing that game, because I think Alan Hutton will actually die on the pitch.
I'm all right with that.
I don't know
if we want to segue into maybe discussing the back line of Aston Villa right now, but I'm currently having some serious issues with them, and I don't know if you guys agree.
Well, before we get there, I mean, we're talking the future matches here, and for some reason, I don't know why, the one match that worries me more than any other, the one I could just see us embarrassing ourselves, is at Bolton. After that Carling Cup match, I could see Bolton doing 4-1 on us or something like that.
I don't think Bolton has 4 goals in them, and I think they're not good at home. Like, they just got their first victory at home. Like, they'd lost every game at the Reebok up until last weekend. And I think
they win that game 5-0.
Well, yeah. But that was Stoke after playing in Europe, and Stoke are terrible after playing in Europe. Don't get me wrong, I'm pessimistic enough to see us losing to Bolton at Bolton, but I don't think it's gonna be a blowout.
And that game becomes a game you have to win. They have to get 3 points out of that game, because you've got obviously the Tottenham, then you got Swansea, which you also have to win. But then you got United. After Bolton, you got Liverpool. You got Arsenal, who's turned it around. And then you're going to the Britannia, which is impossible. And then you're going to Stamford Bridge, which is forget about it. So, you know, those games are both the Bolton and Swansea are huge.
And then, yeah, but look at the games
we've got to be seen as a winnable game.
Look at those winnable games we've had thus far. We had QPR where we didn't get it. We had West Brom where we lost, for heaven's sakes.
The QPR match, we drew, but you could. The game was winnable, and it should have been. It could have been won. I'm making excuses, but I mean, it's not like they went in and shit the bed. It wasn't a pretty match by any means, but they did have it won until the end when Dunn scored off his own ass or whatever he did. So I don't know. Those two matches, though, out of all those coming up, just seem like the ones that you got to grab 3 points out of, because the rest are going to be difficult to get even one. And you're talking all the way up till the new year, till 2012, when Swansea comes to Villa Park.
Well, yeah, and then you've got the whole transfer window, where I'm sure nothing.
Oh, God. that's when Darren Bent's going to shock everybody and ask for a transfer, because he's about due.
But yeah, didn't you see that? Something popped up where it was like at least 12 rumors that Darren Bent is going to be sold in January. I'm like, what rumors? Were those actually? Did anyone see that?
I did see that, and I thought the same exact thing.
I'm just joking. I don't have any actual basis for that. I have no idea.
Like, I honestly don't know where he would go anymore. I think he's out of team.
He's gone to all the middle. I guess he could go to Newcastle. They could use him, right? That could boost them up to their Champions League aspirations, possibly.
I think that is quite possibly the only place he could go that would anger Sunderland more.
Yeah, which would be hilarious.
If we're gonna lose Darren Bent, I hope we lose him to Newcastle, because that would be hilarious.
Yeah, I'd get over that pretty quick, and I of course hope that Steve Bruce is still in charge of Sunderland when that happens, because I want to see him just explode.
Steve Bruce has a ridiculous face that I think that's worth mentioning. I would have mentioned that if we had recorded after the Sunderland match, but I feel like it's important to note that Steve Bruce has a ridiculous face.
He does. He's a potato face. He's the worst. He's very, very unlikable.
He looks like my aunt. Is that a line?
You shouldn't speak ill of your relative like that.
That's true.
There's a microphone transfer going on.
I think so.
Sounds like it.
Hi, guys.
There's something.
There it is.
Oh. So, okay, so we're all here. We can talk about Norwich now.
Just throw me into the fire, huh?
Well, that's it. That's 3 points now. Pearson or Aston Villa good now? Are we great? Time for the Champions League? Time for nights out in Vienna?
I'm...
Time to get drunk and drive?
You know what? If we ever get stuck in Vienna again, I'm seriously going. But, yeah, I'm afraid to say anything pessimistic because Robert might get on my case.
I'm not quite optimistic again yet.
No, you should have heard. Robert has us winning at Spurs next after the international break.
What?
Wait, what?
We're getting a point from United and we're beating Spurs.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't think I said anything about beating Spurs, but we're definitely getting a point from United. I feel it.
Okay, is that where Mark Albrighton's going to be back to his former glories?
Yep.
Okay, no, he's been murdered by Barry Bannon.
Wow, I did miss a lot.
You did. Graham helped us uncover the crime of the century where Barry Bannon's drunk driving accident was just a cover-up for the murder of Mark Albrighton.
Wasn't Albrighton on the bench against Norwich?
That was like a Weekend at Bernie's thing. It wasn't really...
Wow.
Okay. You notice the Wayfarers and the Hawaiian shirt he was wearing? Yep.
Okay.
That's a thing.
Well, I'm just going to let Graham take over all of my recording from now on. Clearly he knows more than I.
Wow.
I feel like we actually should talk about Norwich in some sort of serious way, because I authentically thought that was a match we were definitely going to lose and it was going to become depressing and, you know, a dark cloud, whatever, whatever. But we won it and it was exciting. And I feel like, I don't know, we should, given how pessimistic we've been basically all the time, we should probably talk about how great that was.
Totally agree.
Okay, good.
I would just like to say that clearly Aaron didn't think it was that great because I sent him a text message and he never responded. And I was actually positive. And this is the man that is positive after, you know, what was that match 2 weeks ago? Where he's like, oh, it's okay. We at least look good. This one, no, not at all. Just got to bring him in since, you know, he's not here to defend himself.
That's true. Well, no, his match review was reasonably positive.
Yeah. It's gone from, his match reviews have gone from like, I'm going to kill myself to, things might be not so bad, I think. Which is good. I think he's right. I think, you know, despite the fact that we've bemoaned, we spent the first, I think, 10 minutes just ripping Alan Hutton to shreds, which we can do again in a little bit, but I mean.
When can we not rip Alan Hutton to shreds?
We should have Matt F. on to talk about Alan Hutton. That would be pretty funny. But yeah, I mean, if things do look good, and they looked fun, and like I said, you know, and I said this during the game on Saturday, but I imagine if we had two fullbacks that didn't absolutely suck donkey, that we might have a system that's watchable all the time, and that's some hope for me, I guess, right?
Well, and I mean, it's a good continuation because I think we could have beaten Sunderland. Like, we played pretty well against Sunderland. We could have won that game. And I mean, the really exciting thing about Norwich City is because Alan Hutton was not even the most overmatched right back on the pitch. Like, Gabby absolutely tore Kyle Naughton to shreds.
Oh, he's just undescribable right now, really. It's amazing.
He's torn quite a few people to shreds.
I assume you guys have already covered Gabby in some depth as well.
Well, Graham was trumpeting him for Euro 2012 to my skepticism.
Well, it's, let's see, between him and Downing.
I honestly don't see how Ashley Young isn't the first choice left winger, especially since, even though Aaron said we're not allowed to question Gabby's abilities as a winger, I'm still not convinced he's actually a winger.
I didn't ask this, but what is Capello playing? What is his tactic?
I mean, it changes. Time.
Yeah. Yeah, it tends to change depending on who he's called up, and considering he's called up a few different people this time.
Well, and it's always going to be makeshift until he gets, like, Jack Wilshere back, actually. I think that Jack Wilshere is one of the most important players for England, and obviously that's going to affect who's going to be playing and how the formation is going to look. But I mean, yeah, I don't see how Ashley Young playing regularly in the Champions League doesn't slot in above Gabriel Agbonlahor for an actual international tournament. But it's nice to see, you know, Agbonlahor's form getting recognized.
So more about Norwich, that's not Gabby or Alan Hutton not being the worst player on the pitch.
That free kick was nice. That Pilkington's free kick, right?
Oh, God, yeah. That was gorgeous.
Although at the time, it just felt like a knife in the heart.
It did suck at the time.
It was absolutely terrifying, but, you know, good for him. Robert, you were going to say something?
I was just going to say that, you know, I just want to say that despite all the derision, I really kind of enjoy Norwich's uniforms.
Oh, God.
I agree with you, for the record. It's one of those color combinations that you never think would work until you see it, and you're like, oh, you know, that's fine.
Not if you're from Oregon and you're an Oregon State fan.
Oh, boo. Well,
fair enough. I think that's up there with Spurs in purple as sort of the more surprising actual good kit.
Okay, the Spurs purple is amazing. I love it. I think that they should wear it all the time. But that's my two cents on the fashion of the Premier League.
So one of the questions I've had about Norwich that I've seen in the past 2 days since the win is everyone keeps saying it was great to get the win, but guys, we got the win against Norwich. But has Norwich looked so bad that we should all poo-poo a win against them?
No. I mean, as I've said a number of times as I was building up Norwich, they could have at least gotten a point at Old Trafford. Like I think they were better on the day than Manchester United was, and any team that can do that, I mean, I don't know. I'm sort of questioning whether or not they're the best of the promoted teams, especially because of the sort of comedy defending they indulged in over the weekend. But I think they've got a decent chance of staying up, especially when you consider how absolutely terrible some of the teams, like, for example, I don't know, Wigan, are this year. They've got a decent chance of staying up.
Oh, my God, Wigan. Yeah, they don't look as bad, nearly as bad as teams like Wigan and even, Blackburn at all. They're better than those teams. They're better organized than those teams. They care more than those teams. I mean, it's not even close. I think it's a good win for sure. And Swansea's playing well too. They're not going to be a pushover. They have the same. But
I was going to say, just really quickly off the top of everyone's head, pick three teams that you think are going to be relegated this season. Starting
Wigan.
With
Wigan. Oh, okay,
I mean, we all agree on Wigan. I think we'd all agree on Blackburn, would we not?
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully for sure.
So even though they've been playing well over the last couple of weeks, I can't imagine that last.
Nah, it's a fluke.
Yeah.
Who is? So
Blackburn, Fulham wouldn't be particularly surprising.
So who's the third team, I guess, is the question.
I could say I'm QPR.
QPR?
I could see QPR getting relegated.
I could see that too, but... Sorry, I just noticed that Everton is down just above the relegation zone. They'll come back up after December, though. They always do.
And I was going to say, I was watching that Wigan-Wolves match, and at the first 25, 30 minutes, I'm like, these teams are garbage. And then Wolves kind of just turned it on a little bit. But they always seem to have enough to kind of hang on to the last minute. So I'm going to say they stay up. But I think QPR might be a good bet to drop down. Or I'm sure Swansea's not going to stay mid-table. I think they're going to fall. West Brom could be in trouble.
Yeah, that's
know.
What I was going to say. It could be West Brom. I don't think it'll be Bolton.
I don't either. I don't think so at all.
I was going to say Bolton because they've looked so – I mean, except for this weekend, of course. They've looked really anemic. And
hold on.
They just don't have anything.
Didn't you just have, like, not 15 minutes ago, say Bolton are going to be 4-1?
I did. I absolutely 100% did. And I think that will be one of their few wins for the rest of the season.
So hold on. You have us getting beaten 4-1 by a relegation team.
A team with the worst goal differential in the Premier League.
But we're going to beat Spurs.
I never said that. No. Well, I might have said that after I murdered Mark Albrighton, but no. It's Okay, here's the thing. I have no logical feelings about Bolton. I feel like they're a team that could totally kick our ass, and yet I feel like they're one of the worst teams in the Premiership. And I'm not sure why. They, by all logical means, they look terrible. And yet, for some reason, they terrify me in only our matchup.
I'll give you the fact that they have more of a chance of beating us 4-1 than they do of being relegated, I think. That's just my two cents. I don't think they're going down. I think their coach is too good. Their quality's not that bad. I think they'll stay up.
Yeah, I think they've just had a mess in the first third of the season is all. They'll pull back up.
They'll be fine.
It's worrying how many of these teams we mentioned to get relegated where I've thought, yeah, I'd take their manager over McLeish. Sure, why not? Like, pretty much all of them except for Warnock, I would take, you know, I'd take Coyle, I'd take Martin Yule. I'd take
you'd
any
take
of those
team?
Guys over. Oh, I guess not. I don't know.
No way. He's a clown.
But
the Blackburn supporters decided to pony up enough money to get a plane with a banner to get him fired. I mean, in this economy, you know he's bad if they're willing to go that far. I mean, jeez.
Yeah, that was quite surprising. And also, I don't know. They could give that money to the team and see, here, buy a decent player.
Exactly. Yeah. That must have been expensive.
I was gonna say this is completely unjustified, but I just have the impression that Blackburn is essentially the Pittsburgh of Great Britain. Is that fair? Does anyone think anyone object to that? Kind of seems like a really blue collar city.
I'm pretty sure it is. I've never been to Blackburn, so I probably shouldn't slander it. But
I don't know enough about it. Let's take a look. You know how all those cities have sister cities, like official sister cities?
Yeah.
I'm going to see who theirs is if they have one.
They probably don't.
Yes, they do.
Oh.
Twin towns, and they're both towns I've never heard of. One is in Perron in France, and the other one is Altena, Germany. Damn it.
Huh.
They only have two. So that's not a good sign if you only have two sister cities.
Altena, Germany has a really cool crest, though. It's got like a woman with a... Oh, no, never mind. That's a man. That's no fun. If it's a woman with a sword, it's okay. But if it's a man with a sword, not as cool.
No, Gareth, I think you're right. I mean, their entire history is littered with Industrial Revolution facts, textile mills, and labor strikes.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
I think you might be right on with that one. This is a pretty bleak picture they're painting here of Blackburn.
And a pretty bleak picture of Blackburn on Wikipedia.
Yeah, it's not good.
This is what the 7500 to Holt podcast provides every week, the opportunity to check out a new Wikipedia article.
Yes!
Okay. Guys, I've gone silent and missed most of what you said, mostly because I wanted to see how much it would cost the Blackburn supporters to get a plane.
Is that you or is that me? Okay.
I don't know. I think I'm not
Robert,
but I might be fuzzy now. That's great.
This is what happens when you try to do research. Whoa.
Well, apparently you can get a plane for as cheap as $350. So.
Oh.
So it's not really that much. Maybe. I don't know. And as much as much as
stop. Stop talking.
This is so terrifying. This is you've got robot voice going on, Robert.
You got to
echo. This is science fiction right now.
Oh dear. It definitely doesn't fit with his optimistic personality.
Oh my God! This is like The Fly coming to life.
Well, I'm staring at the. Oh, there goes Robert.
He'll be back, I'm sure.
Okay, I'm trying to figure out what else we need to talk about because we covered Norwich and we covered.
Well, Kirsten brought up earlier, and I was thinking the same thing. Did we want to talk about the maybe time to look at a new back four? If not.
Yeah.
Even the center backs, I mean, I feel like, and I've been thinking this for a while now, that I feel like, you know, Duns and Collins have been entrenched as the two guys who are going to start, and they're always going to start, and it doesn't matter who the manager is or what year it is or anything, they're just going to be there, and they're always going to be there. And I don't think that makes sense, and I don't think it's necessarily the right answer either. I don't know what the solution is. I know we talked about, you know, Cuellar and Clark are possible replacements, but even just looking outside the club for help, I feel like it's time to maybe try something new. These guys, I mean, they seem old guard to me. Maybe you guys can expand on that. Or
hang on, I gotta add Robert back to the call.
Cool.
All right. Well, I don't know. I think Dunn Collins, I mean, they're not the problem with our back four, are they? I mean, if we're going to start replacing people on the back line, Alan right. Hutton is first, second, third, and fourth on the list. And even after that, I don't have a lot of confidence in Stephen Warnock. And
I don't either.
I mean, if we're replacing one of Dunn and Collins, which I imagine it would be James Collins, because Richard Dunn, I mean, even though I don't like him at all, he's always going to start.
Right, and he is. That's my point. I agree with you 100% that if we're replacing people and we're taking priority, there's no doubt it's Hutton first and Warnock second. I mean, those guys both strike the fear of God into me, and I certainly do not go to church. I mean, they scare the shit out of me. They're bad, really bad. But I'm just kind of, you know, thinking like for a long-term plan, it just doesn't seem like, I don't know. I feel like Dunn and Collins are just going to be there like always until I'm like 40, and they're never going to go away. And it saddens me.
Okay, I'm going to check how old, because I don't actually know how old Dunn and Collins are. I mean, they look really old.
That's the thing, right? Hutton looks really old too, but these guys aren't that old. I think they're in their mid to late 20s.
I think Collins is like 26.
Which is disgusting because I'm 31 and I feel like I look 5 to 6 years younger than him. I mean, he's just decrepit looking. He's hideous.
Richard Dunn is 32 years old. So, I mean, that's reasonable. Let's see. Disappointingly, his Wikipedia picture is not absolutely psychotic. I feel like he really deserves it. Collins is 28, believe it or not. Hutton is 26.
That's also insane.
And Warnock is 29.
Warnock's 29?
Doesn't he seem old? He seems so old.
He got his start with Liverpool in 2002. Like, he's been playing for a long time.
Wow.
So, I don't know. I would imagine, I guess, the first name on the list to shift into that back four on a regular basis will be Kieran Clark, and he'll probably replace Collins. But
I mean, Collins is kind of, it seems like he's getting banged up more and more. And he seems to be, Aaron mentioned it earlier in the year too, that he's kind of been moaning about a contract. And I don't think that's a priority for anybody at the club to extend James Collins. It just doesn't make sense.
At least not for more money.
Right, exactly. And I mean, when he got that bandage wrapped around his head, it was just absolutely terrifying. He looked like a Scooby-Doo villain.
That's exactly what he looked like.
Just like, oh, nightmare. He's gross. And then whoever had that picture of his back.
That was me, yes. I'm sorry.
Oh, my God.
I felt like I needed to share it with the world since my eyes had been burned out.
Not good.
I was reading, I think, since we briefly mentioned, you know, transfers or whatever, and I guess we kind of talked about those transfer policy earlier in the show. The Guardian did an interview with Johan Tobias, the center midfielder for Newcastle, who's, you know, got them sort of up in the Champions League places and won French League with Lille. And he mentioned in the piece that he was going to come to Aston Villa had Gerard Houllier stayed there. But because he moved on, he went to Newcastle.
This makes me so sad.
Like, I've never actually been kicked in the teeth, but I would imagine that something.
That is, yeah. I read a couple grumblings that was the case. And, you know, I'm on the record as a fan of Houllier, so that just sucks.
I think we have Robert back.
Am I still sounding sci-fi and scary?
Nope, you're back. Normal.
Hooray.
You sound wonderfully optimistic.
A little trepidatious. With regards to the Houllier thing, I've read about that. And part of me was very upset because, hey, great players. And the other part of me said, but our players don't hate playing for us now. I mean, the results haven't quite come yet, but at least the players aren't in this year.
Well, and that's the thing. I think that's the thing is they're the same players, right? So we're the same team. Like, Julier was, yeah, some of the entrenched players hated his guts, but they would have been gone, no doubt, at some point in the near future, and he would have replaced them with more exciting players, I think. That's just how I saw things going.
Like, obviously, pretty much our whole back line.
Right, exactly. And I there's no way Duns and Collins and Warnock and those guys were going to stick around after that season. So
that's a good point. I don't know why this season, after growing up on Lookout Landing and Smart Baseball blogs and whatnot, I hate the idea of team chemistry. But yeah, for some reason this year, I find myself buying into it with regards to this team. And I'm not sure why, because this team is kind of crappy. So,
yeah, and I don't – at the end of last year, if you watch – I mean, some of the games, the performances they put together under apparently a horrible regime, they look great.
Well, I'm going to counter your chemistry with a central midfield of Yoan Gabay and John McCoon, and just moment of silence. All right.
God.
You realize that in the same thing, you've reminded me of Sidwell and reminded me of the fact that we don't have McCoon.
Oh, man, we discussed Sidwell already? And I missed it.
Do you have anything you want to say about the ginger midfielder?
Apparently, I was the curse of Fulham this week because I hate Sidwell, and therefore that was the reason that Fulham lost. And no, I don't really understand that or comprehend that either. But every time I looked up to see the Spurs-Fulham game, I saw his hideous face and I squealed and looked back down at my computer. Also, may I add, this is not Sidwell, but really, Mark Schwarzer needs to get, is that his name? It's Schwarzer, yes. No matter what. Needs to get a less tight shirt because really, I don't need to see his ribs.
Those Fulham shirts are ridiculous. Like their left back, Risa, who used to play for Roma. Like he's, the guy's stacked, so I mean, I guess it kind of works, but that very, very detailed tech.
Yeah, it's not good. You get an entire nipple topography going on, and it's just not good.
Well, and that's the thing. You can watch Fulham away when they're in the black or in the red, but then they're just, oh, come on, it'll ruin your day.
It really did.
It's nauseating.
The tight kits and having to watch Steve Sidwell, it was just really not fair.
So while we're on the topic of nauseating, I have a column open called Why Big Eck is Producing His Own Transformers Script at Aston Villa, and you brought this to our attention for better or worse. So why don't you talk about it for a bit?
So basically, the article is written as some kind of play on the movie Transformers, which the article had nothing to do with Transformers. The writer listed basically all of the players that McLeish has somehow affected. What he did was just list all the players and then claim that the people who haven't played, just he's never heard of, basically. So like he's like, I just didn't understand the article at all. It was,
hold on, with the permission of the Daily Mirror, which for the record I don't have, I'm just going to read part of this column because I feel like it's important. This is the list thing you're talking about. I can only say what I think based largely on the squad in matches. I certainly agree. Gabriel Igbanlahor, Barry Bannon, Fabian Delph, Richard Dunn, James Collins, Shane, Chris Kern, Alan Hutton, Jillian Petrov, Steven Pollock, Gary Gardner, and Andreas Weimann are better this season than last, which in some cases would not be difficult. Now, hold on.
Exclamation mark.
Yes.
Yeah, well, exclamation mark. Okay, hold on. Shea Given didn't play for Aston Villa last season, right? Like, I'm not... Right. Not
as far off, right? As I know, Shea Given did not play for us last season.
I mean,
he didn't play for anybody.
Yeah, exactly. He's better this season than last because he's playing and not sitting on the bench. That's the only justification for that. Gary Gardner and Andreas Weimann have not played for Aston Villa either this season or last season.
Weimann couldn't even get on the bench this week, despite the fact we had no strikers on the bench.
Well, and then, I mean, he goes on to say, Kieran Clark, Carlos Cuellar, Habib Bey, Nathan Delfonso, and Eric Lehigh have hardly played, so it's impossible to assess them. So,
okay, first of all, when was the last time Bey actually played a game that matters?
I don't think Habib Bey even comes to training anymore.
I don't think he does either.
If he does, he's just got to have, like, no shame, that guy. He just shows up. He's like, I'm still here, guys. What's up? You got something for me to do?
He talks to Andy Marshall.
Exactly. Those dudes are tight. They got nothing.
The least McLean should do is give him a run out, just because Habib Bey does have a brilliant chant about his name.
Oh, and whenever I hear Bey now, I just think of Brian and bye, 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 and then it gets stuck in my head. Thank you, Brian. Anyway, no, I want to address why he thinks that, let's see, Alan Hutton, for instance, is better this season, Stephen Ireland, and Stephen Warnock.
I would argue that Hutton was better last year when he never played. That's the best. That's the best Hutton there can be, the one who's never playing. He's markedly worse when he's on the field.
Why didn't Barry Bannon murder Hutton?
Seriously, he had to kill a guy we like. It's just...
Well, and I'm not sure, for example, Barry Bannon is better this season than he was last season. He's playing more, which I guess, you know, fair enough. But when he played last season, he was actually really good.
Yeah. And Fabian Delph, how is he better? We're just actually... He was dead last season.
Yeah, he's well, his leg is better. His leg is better.
Okay, there we go. His leg is better.
Well, so was Andreas Weimann. He was dead last year, too. So.
He was.
All right,
was.
So we're talking about physical condition. That's what Mr. James Nursery is talking about.
And that's certainly be all because of McLeish's... But just being there, he healed all these people.
Well, I'll tell you, Andrew, he laid hands on Fabian Delph's leg. Just fell into place. It was magic.
And yet he couldn't impart better footballing decisions into him.
And if he's such a magical physio, what happened to Jermaine Yenis?
Yeah. Good point. Maybe he was trying his best to keep him out of the squad, although to be fair, he didn't look that bad on Saturday.
No, he actually looked delightful for 5 minutes.
Positively delightful.
I just don't understand the article, the timing of it. And none of it makes any sense. I mean, yeah, the spot on the table is fine. But anybody who's watched the team knows that things are not great. The style of play has been mostly boring. And, I mean, just because a couple guys have gotten healthy, that they weren't healthy last year, doesn't mean that McLeish is some kind of transformer. I mean, the whole thing is like, it's the worst timing article and it's the worst written article that I've probably ever seen in my entire life.
And also, I mean, who does he say has gotten worse? That would be Bent, Albrighton, and Zogbia.
Right.
Those are the three that we would probably most like to see improve. At least I would. And to be fair, after this article, actually, I think before this article came out, Zogbia was already, yeah, he said his display at Sunderland was encouraging. But Zogbia looked actually really pretty damn good against Norwich.
It's worth noting that I've noticed that his column that was published exactly a week before, I'm presuming he's got a weekly column. So the column that was published exactly a week before this Transformers one was the headline of Why Nice Guy Alex McLeish is Right to Start Getting Tough at Aston Villa. It seems kind of like he's just a big fan.
He's a shill. He must be like a relative or something. I mean, this is just like, why, you know, he's big egg. Hey, right, Alex, right? That's what we're going to do today, right, guys, right?
Careful, guys. You're going to end up with me getting yet another email from somebody who's pissed off how we're slandering the name of journalism.
Hold on. For all the controversy surrounding 10-man Villa's defeat to West Brom, it is clear the club's players are battling hard for new boss Alex McLeish. A man down and trailing, Villa may have lacked creativity, but they display plenty of commitment and fight, particularly
for fuck's sake.
Sing Long's leg from his body.
Oh my God!
Wow! Well, this man's definitely of the old school.
Later that day, the columnist gave McLeish a sponge bath.
Oh, that is never something I need to think about.
I bet you McLeish has the same tattoo as James Collins does on his back.
Oh, God. You know, I wouldn't be surprised that Steve Sidwell in 40 years looks exactly like Alex McLeish. I bet they kind of look, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, they do look eerily similar. Okay, guys, I'm going to wash my brain out with wine now.
Good idea.
And did you guys already discuss, speaking of horrendous articles, did you guys already discuss the Guardian's 5 Things We Learned one?
You know, we didn't mention that. Is there anything you wanna bring up with that?
Well, really, to be honest, whoever AG was who wrote this section. What?
Alan Gardner. He writes every once in a while. He's not one of their big names.
Okay, anyway.
I assumed it was Avram Grant.
All right, well, Avram Grant's writing style, for one thing, I can barely get through it. It's so pretentious. I'm not really sure exactly what he's saying, but I'm pretty sure that he's saying that our team would be better if our fans were better.
Yeah, well, and our good friend Stuart wrote something to that effect last week, essentially saying, well, and fair enough, because there have been a lot of empty seats at Villa Park this season. But he was basically shaking his finger at Villa's fans for not liking Alex McLeish and, you know, not showing up to support Villa, which, you know, fair enough. Like, if you want to call yourself a Villa supporter, I don't think anyone on that writes for the blog thinks that just because Alex McLeish was manager of Birmingham, that's not good enough reason to, you know, carry a grudge or anything. I think if you're going to grudge against McLeish, it should be because he's a terrible manager.
Well, that's my point, too. I mean, who really is thinking, yeah, that son of a bitch came from Birmingham, so screw him? Like, no, it's
that they don't want to fall asleep at a match.
Yeah, it's that we're playing like crap most of the time. That's the problem, not because he came from Birmingham.
Hold on. Hopefully this works, but I think I've sent you a link to the greatest picture of Alex McLeish ever. I need you guys to make sure that you've got it.
I got something.
Yes.
I heard the little beepy thing, but me and my Skype is not very...
Holy God.
Wow.
He has an aura.
Oh my God, I need this. Where is it? Where is it?
This is the picture for the podcast this week.
Okay.
This is going...
Someone G-chat awesome. Me that link.
Okay, hold on. This is the new Andy Marshall.
Oh, God. I'm going to have nightmares tonight, aren't I?
What do you call him? Young Eck?
Yeah.
I think Jesus McLeish is definitely...
That's it. He's looking directly at you, too. It's like a terrible high school picture.
Jesus McLeish wants to save your soul.
This goes right along with the evangelist theme of laying hands on people and healing them too. This is perfect.
Oh God, it's so worse.
I'm never gonna get into the squad after I see this photo. Jeez, Jesus would not approve of any drinking.
Holy God.
Yeah. I'm closing. Now we just have to manage to include that link when we put up the podcast so that people
it's up for me so I can make sure to put it there.
And anyone who follows Andy Folk Hero, it's already there.
All right. I scrolled down to the bottom of the page. There's one comment on the article about Alex McLeish. Big Eck, Big Heart, Big Legend, which I think should be the new tagline for our blog. That's pretty great.
Can we please make that our tagline?
Oh, I'm on it.
Lovely. The one thing I wanted to note about the Avram Grant article from The Guardian was the fact that Gabby Agbonlahor has been called White Boy now.
White
Boy? I don't know if you guys noticed that or not.
I didn't. I kind of glossed over it, but what I just... White Boy and Target Man.
It's like superhero dunk duo ever.
Well,
I don't know where he came up with those names.
I'm sorry, Aquaman was out today, so we've had to give you his backup, Wide Boy and Target Man.
I want to see a... Okay. So he links to something written by John Curtis. Like, John Curtis is the one that came up with these names, but I'm not seeing any reference to Wide Boy and Target Man.
No, this was all Mr. Grant's brainchild.
Wasn't Wide Boy dropped on Hiroshima once?
Oh.
I think that was Big Boy.
Yeah, that was the Target Man.
All right, this is evolved.
Oh, good heavens. And yes, it was Little Boy, in case anyone's wondering.
Oh, yes, Little Boy.
It's worth noting, I'm on our friend James Nursey, his Twitter page. He's tweeted that McLeish has has told the press that if Egbonlahor and Bent play together for England, he may go and watch them at Wembley. Which is, for a man who's getting paid as much as McLeish, you know, you can probably afford the trip down. Why don't you go? Have a nice day out, Alex McLeish.
You may go.
You tease you. Goodness gracious.
Sorry, guys, I'm busy figuring out how to change our tagline all of a sudden.
Well, should we wrap up? Is there anything else that anyone needs to cover?
Yeah, I need to cover how exactly Alex McLeish turned into Jesus.
He looks like he should be on a saint medallion.
That is non-canonical. There is no ginger saint.
I should be able to go to the Vatican and buy this and get blessed by the Pope.
I think if someone can go to the Vatican and paint his face on the Sistine Chapel, that would be
We have a new mission for Philip.
This sounds like a Photoshop challenge for me.
Anyone listening to this can do a Sistine Chapel with Alex McLeish as Jesus and Alex Ferguson as God. Anyone to that?
Oh, please. That's our challenge to you, dear listeners. Get it done.
The photo for this will definitely be the Alex McLeish face on the famous Sistine Chapel painting. I will be photoshopping this as soon as we're done.
All right, and our tagline is changed. So I think all of our work here is done.
All right.
Beautiful.
Excellent podcast.
Nice job, everybody.
Oh, my God, that looks amazing there.
So, all right. Thank you again for listening to the 7500 The Whole podcast. For Kirsten, Andrew, Robert, Graham, and Ginger Jesus, Alex McLeish, I'm Gareth Clint signing off. Have a good night, everyone.
Adios, everyone.
See ya.
Bye-bye.